Radio Prague News.
The Foreign Minister has opened a new Czech consulate in Manchester. The Speaker of the Lower House is to meet the Pope in Rome on Thursday. And demolition work on a brutalist building in Prague will start within weeks. The Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Tomáš Petříček, opened a new Czech Consulate General in the UK city of Manchester on Tuesday. It's the Czech Republic's second diplomatic mission in the UK after its embassy in London and will serve people living in the north of England. Minister Petříček said that the Czech Republic wished to maintain good relations with the UK following Brexit, adding that his government was interested in fostering cooperation in the field of innovation with UK partners. The Consulate General should help Czech firms to continue operating in the country after it leaves the EU, Mr. Petříček said. An estimated 100,000 Czechs are resident in Great Britain. The Speaker of the Czech Lower House, Radek Vondráček, will have a private audience with Pope Francis at the Vatican on Thursday. Mr. Vondráček told journalists on Tuesday he would discuss church-state relations with the pontiff. The Anno politician said he would also raise the issue of the Roman Catholic Church's charity work in the Czech Republic. Mr. Vondráček will be accompanied by the Speaker of the Slovak Parliament, Andrej Danko. While in Rome, the pair plan to mark the anniversary of the death of St. Cyril 1,150 years ago. Demolition work will begin on the Prague-centred Transgas building at the turn of March and April, a representative of the company that owns it said. Campaigners had fought in vain to preserve the brutalist structure located between the National Museum and Czech Radio. The demolition work will last for several months. The owners of Transgas said last month they were planning to either sell the building or the empty site that remains after its demolition, depending on how soon they could complete a sale. Former President Václav Klaus says that if the Civic Democrats had expelled his son, Václav Klaus Jr., a few weeks sooner, the two would have had time to found a party under which the latter could have stood in elections to the European Parliament in May. He made the comment in an interview for the newspaper Blesk, published 3 days after Václav Klaus Jr. had his membership of the Civic Democrats revoked. Mr. Klaus also said that the Civic Democrats should change their name, as he argued, they bear no resemblance today to the party he founded back in the 1990s. Four people from Opava contracted brucellosis, a disease that was eradicated from Czech territory 6 decades ago, the head of the infections department at a hospital in the city told reporters on Tuesday. The four caught the highly contagious illness last summer after consuming unpasteurized milk while on holiday in Armenia. Working with veterinarians, doctors in Opava identified the rarely seen disease after two of the victims sought treatment toward the end of last year. And finally, a look at the weather. Wednesday should be quite sunny in the Czech Republic with temperatures of up to 9 degrees Celsius. Daytime highs will then gradually increase to reach up to 15 degrees Celsius on Saturday. My name is Ian Willoughby and that is the end of the news.
Hello and welcome. You are tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's programme, Prague's famous Lenin Wall, a symbol of freedom under communism, is undergoing a facelift ahead of the 30th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution. The Czech Republic takes centre stage at the upcoming Leipzig Book Fair, among the world's most prestigious literary events, and a bit later we learn how DNA testing carried out by a museum in Brno has uncovered a dozen direct ancestors of Slavic blue bloods from the Great Moravian Empire. All that and more coming up, so please stay with us. John Lennon's Wall in Prague, which features a wide array of thematic street art, is a popular destination for tourists and a symbolic site of Czech opposition to the communist regime. Now its surface features a whole array of new pieces. Thanks to an event organized on the occasion of 30 years of freedom, 20 artists from a multitude of countries added their artwork carrying messages of peace. Tom McEncrow has more.
In a small and secluded square just next to Kemper Park, there is a wall covered in street art that seems out of place in this historic surrounding. But the old buildings that make up most of the square may well envy the attention it gets. Since the assassination of John Lennon in 1980, the wall has been filled with graffiti inspired by the singer, as well as pieces of lyrics from Beatles songs. During the twilight of communism, it was the site where young Czechs wrote their grievances against the regime. Since then, it has become a popular tourist site, but still contains much symbolic value and continuously undergoes change with new art pieces and messages appearing. A considerable addition of new artwork appeared on the wall this week, after 20 local and international artists added their creations inspired by the message of peace. The leading figure behind the project was Pavel Šťastný, the man who created the famous logo of the Civic Forum during the Velvet Revolution.
For 60 years already, Lenin's wall is a symbol of freedom in the Czech Republic. We are just starting our celebrations of 30 years of freedom, and we wanted to give the wall a new face because it is not just a Czech symbol, but also one that is international.
One of the artists who contributed to the wall was Sela Al-Shakari, who is considered to be among the leading visionaries of Arabic calligraphy art.
I did this artwork on a size of 2 meters by 4, and I had the opportunity to have it in different colors so I can show the dynamic of Arabic calligraphy, plus I can show also how beautiful is art and how you can transfer your feelings to an artwork. I created words, actually, which is anyone who knows how to read Arabic, he can understand. But when you see the artwork, you will know and realize that there is something related to love and related to passion, related to feeling, related to, you know, the whole meaning of love.
Other contributors included Czech artist Kurt Gebauer, a group of Serbian artists from the Saša Marčeta Foundation, as well as various ambassadors who painted over templates. Among them was Abdullah Mohammed Al Mania, the ambassador of the United Arab Emirates in the Czech Republic, who designed the flag of his country as a student. His design now also adorns the wall. Mr. Šťastný was not just the main organizer of this event, but also one of the organizers of this year's 30 Years of Freedom celebrations, to be held under the auspices of the Senate.
We are preparing a whole bunch of exhibitions which will reach their crescendo during the autumn and ultimately in November. One of the main features is a traveling exhibition which will launch on Monday in the Sultanate of Oman. After that, it will also be displayed in other states, such as Belgium and Serbia.
When exactly the exhibit will be on display in the Czech Republic is currently being discussed, but Mr. Šťastný says the local public should be able to see the exhibit sometime between the end of April and the beginning of May.
Tom McEncrow reporting. The Leipzig Book Fair, one of the most important literary events in the world, gets underway on Thursday in the East German city, with the Czech Republic as the main guest of honor. The Czech program will be part of the Czech Year of Culture, which was launched in the city last October, celebrating the country's literature, film, photography, music and design. Ruth Frankova has the story.
After a break of more than 20 years, the Czech Republic will once again be the guest of honour at the Leipzig Book Fair under the motto Ahoj Leipzig. Czech literature will be showcased at three separate stands at the Leipzig Trade Fairgrounds, presenting 70 books that were translated into German for this occasion. Professor Tomáš Kubíček, head of the Moravian Library in Brno, which is in charge of the Czech programme, explains the importance of the event for Czech authors.
Czech authors have always striven to be translated into world languages, and German is, of course, the closest to us. For Czech literature, the German market has always been a key, both to European and world publishers. The Leipzig Book Fair is attended by publishers and literary agents from all over the world who come to select books that will be published in the near future, and the guest country is naturally the center of their attention.
The Czech Republic's Guest of Honor program will feature Czech literature as well as music, art, academic seminars, discussions and film screenings. The program will reflect the main theme of this year's event, which is 30 years since the fall of the Iron Curtain, says Mr. Kubíček.
Many of the events taking place as part of the Czech program will be linked to the fall of the Iron Curtain and the end of communism. We will present our main topics in the course of 4 days. One of the topics will be children's literature and comics, which is very much in the focus of German publishing houses these days. Among the other topics is Europe in time of crisis and the 1989 generation, presenting authors who entered the literary scene after the fall of communism. Each of the topics will have its own ambassador, such as Jiří Příbrán or Renata Denemarková, who will be available each day to talk with publishers and journalists.
Among the many authors to present their work at the Leipzig Book Fair this year will be novelists Kateřina Tučková, Jáchym Topol, poets Petr Hruška and Petr Borkovec, and playwrights David Drábek and Petr Zelenka. Among the authors already well known in Germany will be Jaroslav Rudiš, who will be presenting his first German-written novel called Winterberg's Last Journey. The book has already received considerable attention after being nominated for this year's annual Leipzig Book Fair Prize, which is considered to be the second most important German book award.
Ruth Frankova there on the Leipzig Book Fair, which begins on Thursday. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for our main feature. More than 11 centuries after the fall of the great Moravian Empire, there are still direct descendants from the Slavic noblemen living among us. A study of DNA samples carried out recently by the Moravian Museum in Brno found 11 men from the region of Uherské Hradiště who definitely have great Moravian ancestors in their bloodlines. Ruth Frankova has more.
The Great Moravian Empire was the first West Slavic state to emerge in the Central European area on what is now the territory of the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland, Hungary and Serbia. It was founded around the year 830 by the Slavic leader Mojmír and was the first joint state of the Slavonic tribes that became later known as Czechs and Slovaks. A recent genetic testing carried out by the Moravian Museum in Brno as part of a larger historical and archaeological survey has discovered that more than 1,000 years after the collapse of the empire, there are still direct male descendants of the great Moravian noblemen living in the area. The study compared the Y chromosome markers, that is DNA inherited from father to son, of more than 340 men with DNA samples of 75 men buried between the 9th and 13th centuries near the town of Uherské Hradiště. Luděk Galuška, the head of the Center for Slavonic Archaeology at the Moravian Museum in Brno, outlines more details.
This research was part of a large project focused on one of the best-known great Moravian archaeological sites called Uherské Hradiště Sady. In the 1950s and 1960s, a large religious settlement was uncovered here, including a large church and a baptistry surrounded by nearly 1,000 tombs. Around 90 of them dated back to Great Moravia, while the rest were from the 10th to 13th centuries.
According to experts, the settlement was most likely a center of the Holy Moravian Empire and the seat of St. Methodius, the Archbishop of Great Moravia. Methodius and his brother Cyril came to Great Moravia at the request of Duke Rostislav to spread Christianity in this part of the world. They also translated the Bible into Slavic languages. Luděk Galuška says the settlement was most likely part of Velegrad, one of the most important centers of Christianity on the territory of Great Moravian Empire.
It was a large fortified agglomeration covering around 200 hectares of land. It was inhabited by dukes, noblemen, craftsmen, tradesmen, but there were also representatives of the lower classes, mostly farmers, but also slaves. So imagine an early medieval town with 2,000 to 3,000 inhabitants, which is a big town for the 9th century. It is quite possible that members of the ruling family also lived there. I believe that even Duke Svatopluk himself could have lived here in the mid-9th century, and most probably also Bishop Methodius.
To narrow down the search for possible descendants of the great Moravian noblemen buried at the site of Uherské Hradiště Sady, experts from the Moravian Museum in Brno decided to approach local archivists.
My jsme se samozřejmě spojili.
We have, of course, contacted local archivists and asked them to search for people with surnames that appeared on the oldest registry offices as far back as in the 16th and 17th centuries. They selected around 50 names for each of the smaller districts. We also preferred people who had some previous knowledge of their family's history and have already traced their family's trees. Many of the people who cooperated with us have really traced their descendants all the way back to the mid-17th century.
Considering that there are more than 1,000 years separating the great Moravians from their contemporaries, Mr. Galushka says the result of the testing came as a surprise. Out of the 340 men selected for the genetic testing, 18 of them shared their DNA markers with 7 individuals buried at the site. 11 of these men are most certainly linked to 3 members of the great Moravian nobility.
I secretly hoped to find at least 1 or 2 genetic links in the current population that could be linked all the way to the period between the 9th and 13th centuries. You have to realize East Moravia used to be a very restless area bordering with Hungary. It was affected by a number of wars, such as the 30 Years' War, so the local inhabitants suffered a great deal and were greatly affected by all the conflicts.
Given the fragmentary nature of written sources from the 9th century, linking the graves to any specific figures is virtually impossible, says Mr. Galushka. Nevertheless, there are other signs that reveal a great deal about the people who are buried in the graves.
What we do know is that if someone was buried inside a church or in its hallway, and he was buried in a wooden coffin with forged metal fittings, he must have definitely come from the highest society levels. That person was probably either a nobleman or a member of the ruling family. Indeed, the DNA tests have shown that at least 4 representatives of the noble society of the time have contemporary descendants. And we also know that one of the noblemen was definitely a member of the ruling society, since he was buried in a special chapel at Satská Výšina.
One of the 18 men whose DNA was linked to that of the great Moravian nobleman is Marek Miklíček from Ostrožská Lhota, a small village south of Uherské Hradiště. He says he only started tracing his family tree after he took part in the DNA testing.
I didn't know anything about my family before. Only after I found out, I started tracing our history and creating a family tree, and I discovered that my family has lived in the same village since the mid-17th century. I was really surprised. I couldn't believe our paternal line has been preserved for over 1,000 years, considering there were several wars and plague epidemics in the region over the centuries.
The testing of DNA samples was in fact just a minor part of a large-scale research which has been underway for several years, looking at archaeology, history, anthropology, as well as other fields including nutrition, health and genetics. The Moravian Museum in Brno is cooperating on the research with experts from the medical and scientific faculty of the Masaryk University in Brno, the criminal and archaeological department of the Academy of Sciences, as well as a genetic lab at the Michigan University in the United States. Luděk Galuška of the Center for Slavonic Archaeology says they have come across many interesting discoveries over the years.
We have discovered, for instance, that the upper classes enjoyed eating sea fish. This might seem unlikely for a Central European region, but there were various ways seafood could find its way to the table of the great Moravians. First of all, there was extensive foreign trade, but sea fish could also find their way into the large rivers, such as the Danube. The Slavs could have also eaten salted herrings, because salt was a regular commodity. We also know that they ate a lot of meat, which was not that common at the time. This is further proof that they were members of the ruling class.
Společenskou vrstvou.
Although the Great Moravian Empire ceased to exist at the beginning of the 10th century, new graves continued to appear at the burial site at Uherské Hradiště Sady for centuries to follow, when the region came in the hands of the Přemysl dynasty. Experts from the Moravian Museum in Brno are planning to continue with their research, focusing on other burial sites in Moravia as well as at Prague Castle, to see if they can find any links between the Přemyslids and the Great Moravians.
Ruth Frankova on the Great Moravian Empire and the DNA that still lives among us. If you have any comments about today's content, please do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. You can also contact us on Facebook or via Twitter. We'd be glad to hear from you. I'm Brian Kennedy saying thanks for listening and goodbye for now.